From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Culinary workers in Nevada defied their union leadership's criticism of Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All plan to back him up in large numbers in the primary caucuses on Saturday. Bernie Sanders' win of the Nevada primary was greater than the cumulative votes won by his next three challengers together, Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, and Elizabeth Warren. Buttigieg warned against Sanders, saying he would alienate Democrats and Americans in general, while calling on others to withdraw from the race in order to consolidate the centrist vote. Meanwhile, media pundits like MSNBC's Chris Matthews reacted hysterically to Sanders' momentum, likening it to the Nazi invasion of France. But what the numbers from Nevada show is that Latinos, African Americans, and working people across different races coalesced around Sanders' vision for a different kind of presidency. As the elite fear-mongering about Sanders being as divisive as Trump builds up, the reality is that Sanders appears to be winning over a far more diverse electorate than the experts thought him capable of. My guest is Rosa Clemente. She is a community organizer. In 2008, she was a Green Party vice presidential candidate. Currently, she's a doctoral candidate in the W.E.B. Du Bois Department of Afro-American Studies at UMass Amherst. And she's a news correspondent for our program and a frequent guest. Welcome back to the show, Rosa.
Thank you, Sonali.
So let's first talk about what happened in Nevada specifically. Now, it's only the third primary of the race. We've had Iowa, where Sanders won the popular vote, New Hampshire, where he won, but not as decisively, and Nevada, where he decisively won. Some are saying, still, that's just 3 out of 50 races, not enough to show momentum. What do you think happened?
Well, I think that first and foremost, most of the workers in the culinary union defied their leadership and voted for Bernie Sanders. And as well, you know, there is a huge continuing to grow Latino population in Las Vegas. But many workers, you know, in the state of Nevada alone, only 24% of workers are in unions. It's a right to work state. So there are a lot of workers out there who are not able to keep up with rising costs in the state of Nevada, and particularly in Las Vegas, as house prices and many other things rise. Workers there still are fighting for either their right to unionize or their right to critique the union when the union is not going with the most of what the membership wants, you know. And as well, I think there's I know that this Latinx population, as people are calling it, especially in mainstream media, even in some other more progressive outlets, what does that look like? It's 60 million of us. There's a lot of differences there. And there's a lot of young people also that make up the Latino population now in the United States of America. So my belief is that a lot of young people came out to vote. A lot of people defied their union leadership, and that people want to see what Bernie Sanders ultimately is talking about in his campaign, which is the way income inequality really cuts at the intersection of everybody's identities.
Now, the slogan of Sanders' campaign is "Not Me, Us," and it seemed that the union leadership in Nevada sort of turned that over on its head, because they had won a very hard-fought battle to get good benefits for their membership. But of course, that doesn't count for non-union members. And it seems as though their worry about Sanders' Medicare for All plan, their refusal to endorse any candidate, and specifically warning against the Medicare for All plan, seems to have backfired. Does that give you a sense that rank and file workers know that they're just one job away from not having health care?
Yeah, I mean, they do know that. And I also believe that people are really understanding what Medicare for All would mean for, you know, everybody in the United States. It would mean no co-pays and no prescription copays. And that's incredibly important to most everybody in this country, even those of us who have health insurance. If we're dealing with something very catastrophic, the copays alone can keep you from going to the doctor, being able to write your get your prescription medication. So I think there is a lot of on the ground community organizations that are really also part are really why Sanders also won Nevada, right? There are many community organizations that have been on the ground, not only talking to the electorate, but also organizing the electorate. And I think we're clear that we saw that in Nevada, and we saw how groups like Dream Defenders and Mi Gente, who have endorsed Bernie Sanders, are not just endorsing Bernie Sanders, they're endorsing a movement, the people in the movement, but they're also on the ground organizing and have been organizing on the ground there and in Iowa, New Hampshire for over a year.
And Nevada was the first diverse state, racially diverse state in the primary races where, you know, a lot of people expected Sanders wouldn't do as well because there had been this critique lingering from 2016 that he wasn't going to be able to win over voters of color. So Nevada being the first diverse state disproved that. Also, it was interesting to see that the so-called moderates or the centrist candidates that are running, like Biden, Buttigieg, and others, Klobuchar, banked on attacking Medicare for All, perhaps not realizing that Medicare for All is actually really popular, especially among Democrats, and they're running for Democrats' votes in the primary races. It seems as though they lost this this gamble.
Well, Medicare as a program in the United States is the one that gets the highest support anytime that people are polled about it. But I also know how hard the Bernie Sanders campaign has worked since the last election up until now and continuing to work on dealing with the critique, which was a right critique in 2016, where were the people of color? What did his leadership team look like? Who was he listening to? And he heard all that. His team heard all that. And they are not only being accountable to the critique, they are bringing together a younger, multiracial, working class group of people together throughout the country. And what happens in the... What happened with Bernie, too, you know, the pundits and the elite and the establishment of the Democratic Party really still were going with a narrative that Bernie doesn't appeal to people of color, which is a completely false narrative, you know, and that's why right now they're melting down and they're worried about South Carolina, and they should be worried because there have been people on the ground, particularly surrogates like Killer Mike and Danny Glover and Philip Agnew, Naomi Klein, Susan Sarandon, Barbara Smith, Eve Ensler, and me are endorsing Bernie. Like, that in itself, his surrogates are multiracial and cut all these identities.
The co-chair of his campaign, Nina Turner, was a Black woman.
You know, and so what we're going to see in South Carolina, look, if Bernie even comes in second place in South Carolina, this might be for Bernie to lock up the nomination. But even with what can be perceived as a win, if he were to come in second, right, would be considered a win. We're also preparing for a Super Tuesday, but the establishment is coming so hard at Bernie right now, and the media apparatus is in step with this idea of centrist moderate Democrats, that we have to also be prepared of what they're going to throw out there. And as activists and organizers, we need to keep doing the work that we're doing in our communities and in other communities.
Now, in Nevada, Elizabeth Warren won less than 10% of the vote. Some suggested that her candidacy was hurt by the early voting in Nevada caucuses. People were allowed to vote, cast their votes for who their first pick was in the caucuses First alignment days ahead, in fact, before the last debate where Warren had a strong showing, in particular where she came swinging at Mike Bloomberg. His first debate appearance took him on over many, many issues. She had a strong showing, but a number of, it seems, Nevadans had already cast their votes. What do you make of where Warren ended up in Nevada and what it means for her candidacy in general?
Well, I don't think she should drop out, and I think people telling her to drop out is wrong and kind of outrageous. I just don't think that Elizabeth Warren and her continuing embrace of capitalism is what young people are trying to hear and what they want. You know, she in every debate has still said she believes in free markets and the system of capitalism, and that does not endear her to working class, Black, brown, poor white people at where we're at in 2020. And although she's gotten a lot of endorsements and support from high profile Latina women and African American women, well, you know, people like me and people like those women that are college educated and have a decent job and have health care, we're not the majority of the electorate. And I think what we're seeing with Elizabeth Warren is her inability to really connect, particularly with young people.
So the Biden factor, let's talk about South Carolina, where you mentioned the next races. It's happening Saturday. It's a traditional race. Polls have showed that Biden is neck and neck with Sanders, but Biden has spent a lot of time in South Carolina. In fact, even before the Iowa caucuses wrapped up, he was in South Carolina campaigning there, where he has been wooing Black voters in particular. And it's actually quite surprising that in the last poll, Sanders was neck and neck with Biden in South Carolina, suggesting that Sanders has caught up. What has Sanders done that has been seen positively, especially by the Black community, where Democrats in particular in South Carolina, the Black vote is critically important? Is it just that he has brought in this big tent of people, more diverse folks? But is it also his policy discussions like Medicare for All that Black voters in South Carolina are realizing they would really like to have rather than the status quo, which is what Biden is promising?
So two things in South Carolina, that there is also in South Carolina not a monolithic Black vote. Mm. The African Americans that are saying that they will vote for Biden are 50 and over for the most part. People under 45 who are African American in South Carolina are voting for Bernie Sanders.
Wow.
So, you know, I caution people to think of any particular vote as a monolithic vote, as well that when particularly young African Americans are hearing health care for all, cancellation of student debt. If you didn't go to college, how can we help you have a career and have a livable wage? Climate, you know, I mean, Bernie is the only one that's putting out, of course, with Alejandra Ocasio-Cortez, is putting out a real plan to save the planet. You know, so for me, I think Bernie's going to continue to surprise people because there is a narrative in the media that young people don't care and don't vote. And if that was the case, then Bernie wouldn't be where he's at. And young people, once they get to know what his policies are, and some older African Americans as well, of course, everything Bernie has put out there is what we want, as well as the abolishment of mass incarceration, stop caging children, and a real immigration comprehensive reform. I think we're going to have to push Bernie on that a little bit more about what does a moratorium look like around deportations. But the fact is that, again, you have a plethora of really community-based organizations throughout the country that for the first time ever endorse Bernie. And that's what we're going to see play out in South Carolina. And if he sweeps Super Tuesday, he locks up the nomination. Again, I think we have to be prepared how the establishment might want to contest this at the DNC, and that the movement behind Bernie Sanders is going to have to get stronger and more solidified. But I think what's going to happen Saturday in South Carolina is probably going to rattle a lot of particularly the mainstream media and the pundits who keep getting it all wrong or having meltdowns. So
let's talk about the billionaires in the race. There's two of them, Mike Bloomberg and Tom Steyer. Tom Steyer, there was an article in the New York Times on Monday showing that he has, rented his campaign headquarters in South Carolina from the daughter of the state's most powerful Democrat, Representative James Clyburn. He has spent a lot of time in South Carolina. He, like Bloomberg, appears to be trying to buy up support. Bloomberg in recent days has come under fire for hiring social media influencers, unfortunately not doing a very good job of it. Some of them have very few followers, but they're just, he has so much money, he's just indiscriminately throwing money into social media. I know that you have strong critiques as someone who is very familiar with New York City politics of Bloomberg. What about these two billionaires, these two white men, male billionaires in this race? Why are they still in the race?
Well, I mean, they're in the race because they keep spending money, but as much money as they spend, they cannot fool the electorate. Mm-hmm. And my family is, most of my family lives in Las Vegas, and I was just there about a month ago, and the amount of Steyer signs would have blown anyone away.
Wow. You know, everywhere. I haven't seen a single Steyer sign in Southern California where I live.
I know, just huge billboards everywhere and anywhere. And my family, and some of them who were on the wrong side in 2016, on the other side, other 45 side.
Oh, wow.
Caucused for Bernie. And, you know, part of why they all did was not conversations just with me, but because of, again, what can healthcare and Medicaid for all look like. But, you know, for Bloomberg, if you're from New York City or anywhere, he's the enemy. I mean, what can you say about him?
There was a poll on Monday, by the way, that showed that 33% of New Yorkers would support Bloomberg and pick him as their leading candidate. It was a very small poll, though, just a few hundred people. But I was sort of surprised at that number in New York City alone.
Yeah, New York City. But even up here in upstate New York, where I'm at in Albany and then all the way to the border in Buffalo, there's two Bloomberg offices that have opened here in Albany in the last 2 weeks. He's the only presidential candidate with any signage everywhere. And that's one thing I caution, like, the campaigns right now, that everybody doesn't live in a big city. But it doesn't surprise me that 33% of people polled in New York City. To me, it's like, who was polled? Probably mostly white, rich people that can afford to live in New York City and love the New York City of now and don't really care about racist policies like stop and frisk, that at one point was stopping more Black and Latino men than actually exist, and really terrorized our communities, not for 2 years, but for 12 years. Bloomberg changed the rules so he could become the mayor a third time. And then when he left, he made sure to change them back. And Bill de Blasio has, you know, hasn't been very progressive. So I think it's who are they polling? And also, if they're going to spend billions of dollars on ads, you know, I think at this point, there's just an electorate that's more savvy. I think younger people know about algorithms and bots and trolls. And, you know, it doesn't matter how many commercials you're running on TV. Most young people don't watch TV like that. And, you know, the way young people are articulating how they feel and what they want is through, you know, social media, but also through conversations with their friends, but also with their families. So for me, I see Bloomberg and Steyer staying in it. And that just shows the arrogance of not only billionaires, but the arrogance of rich white men who are billionaires. And someone like Bloomberg, no one should want him to be the president. But unfortunately, he is buying, and I say that as I say it, he is buying African-American, Latino, high-profile elected officials. And he is doing it, and the idea that you have African-American mayors who are supporting Bloomberg really shows how he has built this network of people that he has been giving money to, and now this is their time to pay up. You know, so he's not dumb in what he does, but I don't see him doing anything great on Super Tuesday.
Well, we shall see what happens on Super Tuesday. There are still many media pundits saying that, well, just because we've had three races that the centrist so-called moderates have lost doesn't mean anything. It's still very early. We'll see how it all plays out Super Tuesday, when more than a dozen states around the country are voting, including, for the first time, California. Rosa, thank you so much, as always, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
My guest has been Rosa Clemente. She's a community organizer. She was the 2008 Green Party vice presidential candidate, currently a doctoral candidate in the W.E.B. Du Bois Department of Afro-American Studies at UMass Amherst, and she's our news correspondent. We've been discussing Bernie Sanders' momentum and his showing in Nevada. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.